Dissolution by Stéphane Molyneux, Chapter 24. What am I up to today? Thought Helen, blearily, staring at her peas. Her veined and spotted hands rested beside her plate, a flowered monstrosity with curled edges and ducklings in the middle. She remembered how, as a child, she had been told and scolded that she couldn't leave the table until all the puppies and kittens at the bottom of her bowl were visible. Her brother had always tried to help her by surreptitiously sneaking food from her plate, but her parents had gotten wise to this ploy and chased him out of the kitchen until her bowl was squeaky clean. Derek would peek around the white, rounded wall edge, which always reminded her of icing to the point where she had to refrain from taking a bite out of her own house, and would give her a manic thumbs up, encouraging her to finish the torture as soon as possible. His hair always spiked towards the ceiling, and his freckles slid into his cute little wrinkles as his grin widened. Helen could not remember a time where she lived without a little knot of shimmering tension in her stomach. Her earliest memories were of seeing her parents arguing in useless shrillness. Her first memory was of sitting in a baby stroller in the dark, gum-searing cold at a bus stop under a street lamp as her parents bickered and argued, their foggy breaths at war in little ripples and whirlpools and eddies of air and dominance. It was like puffs of gray ghosts were crawling out of their mouths and raging at each other with lazy, expanding fists. They emerged with great energy, got caught up in the endless swirling of snowflake air, and faded into nothing, like the endless, unresolved arguments of her parents. When Helen got older, and she first looked at pictures of her parents when they were younger, her mouth dropped open. Her father had been a kind of low-rent lumpen proletariat with an honest-to-goodness mullet, business up front, party in the back, and a ratty Jimi Hendrix t-shirt. He was tall, lanky, with lazy sunglasses, great hair, and an easy smile. He was definitely the leader of various sports teams, was the first among his peers to get a motorcycle, and sailed into early alcoholism without any hiccups or speed bumps. He was a party dude, great at bowling and poker, not much into reading, and bad and impatient at assembling anything. Furniture, model airplanes, his own future. He talked a big game about his potential, but mostly to get laid. He claimed to have endless business ideas, was going to get into the trades, make money at gambling, pool, or poker. Praised his own ability to hustle, and strongly hinted that he was not overly constrained by legal concerns. He had expensive tastes, expensive hobbies, expensive items, and extremely ill-defined sources of income. He lived without a shred of self-doubt, which gave him easy, soulless dominance over his weedy peers. Helen's mother had been, well, sexy. There was no other way to describe it. There was an embarrassing excess of pictures of her draped over her boyfriend's motorbike or at the beach, in a red bikini no less, or seductively sipping a drink out front of a movie theater or giving a half smile while peering over obviously borrowed eyeglasses. When Helen first saw the photographs, the colors had yet to fade, although the resolution was fully Polaroid potato cam, making her parents look even younger and more distant. As Helen grew up into her high single digits, her father flailed financially, and her mother gained weight. It drove her mother mad with frustration to watch her father energetically embark on money-making ventures and then fade and falter as the easy money failed to immediately materialize. He would spend money on equipment, advertising, renting spaces for a landscaping business or tire sales or an RV lot or junking cars, and he would be the lord of his domain, hiring friends and playing big shot, making phone calls and spending money, but would never track income versus expenses, hired too many people, hated coming down on his lazy friends, and ended up in a grim and drab variety of bankruptcy proceedings, corporate dissolutions, and poverty barrel scraping. The constant tensions about income, expenses, work, and laziness drove Helen's mother into vengeful overeating. Even as a child, Helen could read the clear brutality of the equation. If you won't make money, I won't stay thin. As her parents' relationship deteriorated, her brother Derek gravitated more towards their father, while Helen ended up mostly avoiding their mother. The lack of achievement, affection, and sex meant that almost every syllable her parents spoke to each other was like a sword swish, grazing skin and drawing faint bruises and light blood. Helen's mother would always try to give her twisted, self-justifying life lessons, such as, "Don't ever believe men. Your looks will fade. Love is a business. Don't ever settle. Once you are surrounded by losers, there is no escape. Hope is not a plan." And so on and on. And of course, as her mother gained weight, the marital fights only increased. Once, her father drove his wife for a picnic about 10 kilometers away and then took off in the car, forcing her to walk home. When she finally arrived, sweaty, exhausted, and humiliated, he praised her for finally getting some goddamned exercise. She spent too much on food. He spent too much on alcohol and his friends. She refused to consistently exercise. He refused to consistently work. She had no discipline. He had no discipline. She was fat. He was lazy. She was forced to be the disciplinarian because he was just the daddy buddy. She refused to take responsibility. He never grew up. She gained weight because he stressed her out. He was stressed out because she was fat. These bloody circular whirlpools of endless blame had absolutely zero exit points. It was like two shattered satin rings of hearts swirling down into a bottomless black hole. As she got into her early teens, Helen understood that her mother had an eating disorder. She ate out of stress, out of anger, out of a desire to avoid sex as punishment to her husband, as a humiliation ritual for them both, and to keep him poor by making him look trashy. Terrified of any future mirroring of either of them, Helen began starving herself. She truly felt that she would rather die than turn into her mother. So when she was forced to eat, she just went to the bathroom and made herself throw up. No one ever knew about this, although Helen was sure her mother had her suspicions because she made endless jokes about the number of worms that must be living in Helen's intestines since she never gained weight, no matter how much she ate. But Helen had vivid dreams of her slender mother lying in a deep grave, her extended family all around the hole, shoveling actual flesh onto her slender frame, literally burying her in fat. And because Helen was thin and very pretty, the cool girls at school, the cheerleaders and gymnasts and dancers, who always stood with one foot at 90 degrees from the other, allowed her entrance to their extremely upwardly mobile female potential. They were slender, like rockets, like javelins, which meant that only the sky was their limit when it came to upward mobility. "The fats stay at the bottom," they would say while scrutinizing whatever magical combination of protein and rice would keep them one step away from death's door in the Goldilocks zone of hotness, slim enough to be super attractive, not so skinny that you lost your period. "My hands never used to have veins," thought Helen, staring at her rounded claws. "And those liver spots are like the ultimate slow-moving clouds that only fade when I do. They will spread until I am the exact color of old ash. Her eldest son came into the kitchen. Mama, you done? We have to go.
Okay. Okay.
Helen felt a deep twinge of unease. The unease she had felt her whole life, except briefly when Robert first began to make real money. Sasha has finished packing all your toiletries. Is there anything else that you need? You know you'll be gone for quite a while, right?
No. No.
Muttered Helen, still staring at her hands.
Yes. Yes.
Sorry to hustle you along, Mom, said Justin briskly. His beard was salt and pepper, his hair was thinning, his belly was spreading. His father aged quickly as well, thought Helen. Must be something in the family line. My grandparents stayed well-preserved. Our genetics are like jam, or a fridge, or a freezer. You need a haircut. Her words were automatic, toneless. Oh, you're right, I will get one on the way back. Thanks for the reminder. He seems too happy, thought Helen, again with a deeply tolling bell of unease in her innards. Justin helped her off the stool, gripping her thin shoulders a little too tightly. Don't want you to fall now, he said a little too loudly. Justin's wife came in carrying an overnight bag. Her long brown hair, suspiciously even in its color, was tied back in a severe ponytail. For some reason, Helen had a vague memory of pulling it at some point in the past, probably in some kind of game. Hi, Sasha, said Helen, shrugging off her son's tight fingers.
Hey there, nice to see you, Mum.
Helen smiled. She always loved Sasha's English pronunciations. Mum, not Mom. Sasha smiled back, but there was a tension in her chocolate brown eyes.
All sorted, she chirped.
With a sudden stab of real anxiety, Helen said,
I'm not, are you actually sure that I'm ready for this kind of trip? I haven't seen my friends in forever.
Oh, this is totally the right time, said Justin easily, gripping her elbow and steering her towards the front door. The hallway and its various doors and arches were made of the same soft, rounded icing as Helen's long-lost childhood walls, a whole lifetime and half a world away. She almost expected to see Derek's cherubic, freckled face peering around the corner, inviting her to finish her damn food and come play.
Where is Derek? He's going to meet us there, lovey, said Sasha softly, glancing at her husband. And my grandkids, are they coming along for the ride?
I wonder how many bottles of beer on the wall that ride will be.
No, not at the moment, but they will call you after you disembark.
I miss them, said Helen simply.
And they miss you too, Mom. Come on.
Still gripping her elbow, Justin half levered his mother down the mossy steps.
Not so fast, snapped Helen. One fall. I'm skin and bones. I'm not going to bounce, you know.
I know. Sorry, Mom.
Will you be okay on your own?
Asked Sasha, anxiously.
I'm old, I'm not dead, said Helen peevishly. Leave me with what I'm doing.
She took her slow, cautious steps to the shining, angular vehicle with the wing doors open. She held her arms out in front of a door.
Now I'll take some help, thank you very much.
Both Sasha and Justin rushed to help her in.
That's a hell of a lot of luggage, said Helen, craning her head after settling into the plush seat.
Justin smiled. His teeth were slightly ringed with yellow.
Well, you're going to have a trip, quite a long one. Lord, it looks like you're going to dump me into space, laughed Helen.
Justin leaned forward and whispered something into the steering wheel. The car glided forward, driving itself. Helen clasped her hands to her chest.
God above, I simply cannot get used to this.
It's kind of freaky, agreed Sasha. I still prefer driving myself, but they don't make those cars anymore.
The world marches forward, cried Justin heartily. You want some music?
No, no.
I've got some old 80s stuff in here. A total reminiscence mix. No, that's fine, but thank you.
Helen's voice trailed off. Her eyes widened and she looked out across the shining city, past the flying drone advertisements and other empty cars.
I wish your father could come.
Justin nodded slowly, distantly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sasha said, I'm so sorry I never got to meet him. His photos are totally impressive. What a stud. Helen laughed.
When he was younger, yes.
He didn't age quite so well.
Oh, he worked so hard. It was crazy. He had this boss, a real creep in his own way. Long gone now, of course. And I was just thinking, last night, I dreamt of him.
Helen's voice caught in her throat.
You don't know. You're still quite young, but when you get old, you circle right back to your past. Like a movie you loved so much, you start watching it again right when it's ended.
I guess when you don't have as much to look forward to, all you do is look back.
But it's like the past is looking into me instead.
I'm sort of obsessing about all the mistakes I made, all my bad decisions. It's also pointless because what can I do now?
But I suppose if you get cancer, you think of every single cigarette. Bang, 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 nails in the coffin. And maybe you wonder which cigarette it was that got you.
You had a good life, said Justin briskly. No need for regrets.
It's kind of nasty, in a way, murmured Helen. All these doors open up when you get near the end. And everyone pokes their head out to say hi at least one last time. And I haven't aged. I almost saw little Derek around the corner in your house just now. And I dream so strongly. I don't know why, because dreams are supposed to prepare you for the future, I think, which doesn't make much sense now. I dream so strongly that I wake up and can still smell whatever I dreamt about for like half an hour. Even your father. When you're married, well, you guys know this, it's not like your two bodies, your flesh, become one, except in the children, but your smells mingle, and in a way that's kind of what you miss after. I never met another man who smelled like your father. That's probably why I never remarried, just became this endless nurse. But I dreamt of your father. And enjoy your sleep, kids. You're always half awake when you get old. And he was playing squash, believe it or not, with his boss.
Peter, murmured Justin.
I know his name, snapped Helen. Then her voice softened almost immediately. And it was the strangest thing. Robert, your father, drew a kind of sword to play squash with. And he hit that little ball really well with the flat of the blade. And this was when he was young and slender, not old and rotten. Because everyone comes around the corner as if they've never aged. They say that memories are well preserved. Well, everyone is well preserved in them as well.
Helen laughed.
And he's hitting the ball back so hard and so well that Peter gets all red in the face and he's just slipping in sweat and getting... Oh, he was really competitive, that guy. He's getting really angry. And he bends over to tie his shoe. Robert said he used to do that just to catch his breath. And Robert brought the sword right down on Peter's neck.
I'm a gentle soul, so I thought there would be like flowers or butterflies that would come out. But it was just blood. Just blood. Really dark, dark blood.
But it wasn't a nightmare, which was weird.
Robert was kneeling over Peter and demanding to know how he was going to hide the body, which doesn't make any sense, of course, but it's a dream, so it's not supposed to.
And Robert...
Helen's voice softened even further.
Robert just grew these giant angel wings that flapped really slowly and put these... ripples on the pools of blood.
And he just... Helen's hands floated upward. A rose, you know? And there was this skylight, and Robert just folded his wings and rose through the skylight. A tear rolled down Helen's cheek. And I so wanted to go with him, to be with him in heaven. I don't know. Her voice deepened suddenly. But I was stuck in the bright light with the body and the sweat and the blood, so I couldn't get up and be with him.
It's okay, Mom,
said Sasha, putting her palm on the back of Helen's trembling hand. From the front seat, Justin turned his head briefly.
Well, maybe the dream is telling you that Dad could have lived if he'd stayed off that squash court. My trainer tells me that you just can't be on a squash court after 40. It's just a matter of time until you just...
He snapped his fingers in the air. Helen frowned.
Stayed off the squash court? But he loved that game. Justin snorted. No, he didn't. He just did it for career advancement, Mom. He was as fat as...
It's okay, Justin, said Sasha firmly. Bygones. Justin took a deep breath, rubbing his beard fiercely.
No, you're right. You're right. What's the point?
They rode for a few minutes in silence, the belly hum of the car vibrating their seats ever so slightly. After they arrived, Justin jumped out of the driver's door, walked around, and helped his ancient mother to her feet.
Concierge?
Asked Sasha.
Yeah, yeah, muttered Justin. We've got to get home to the kids. It's summer, they get behind on their homeschooling. I still find it so strange that you never put them in...
Helen frowned, then shook her head slightly.
I was a career woman, so I had to.
Justin turned a snort into a bitter laugh. Helen stared at the mountain of suitcases.
Are you sure that's not too much luggage? I'm so used to airplanes.
No, it's good. It's good, Mom. Don't worry, we've got it all sorted.
He used his wife's accent for the last word. Helen laughed.
God, I've always loved an accent.
A young Indian man with a sunburn came down to help them with the luggage.
Wow, he said.
Sasha glared at him, shaking her head slightly.
He shrugged,
piled all the suitcases into a golden cart, then pushed them up into the concrete ramp towards the low brick building. Helen frowned.
Is this... Yes, this is where you embark. They just need to see you inside to check your papers. I've got them right here. I'll hand them over when we check in.
Helen took a step backwards.
I'm not sure. Come on, Mum, cried Sasha energetically. It's going to be wonderful.
Helen's voice was weak, tremulous.
Why can't anyone come with me?
She burst into tears.
I don't know anyone here.
Justin pursed his lips.
Come on, Mum.
Remember when you dropped me off at daycare? I cried too.
I was alone. I didn't know anyone.
What did you say to me?
He walked up to her and put his hands on her thin shoulders.
It's all right, Justy. You'll never be alone. I'll always be with you in spirit, like a pretty ghost. And you said, do you remember, there are things I have to do. Don't worry, though. You'll make friends before you know it. And you called it a play center, do you remember? And you couldn't make it even when I...
He glanced at Sasha, then lowered his voice. His forehead almost touched his mother's bowed head.
When I peed myself, do you remember?
Helen was openly sobbing now. And you? Justin's voice was thick with compressed emotion. His thoughts raced, chasing themselves.
And you were busy, right, Mom?
You had things to do, so I had to make my way among strangers.
Right? I mean, it makes sense. You had that boss. God, what was his name? That Persian minx. You spent years with him, serving him. Not me. Not Dad. Not Sammy. You fought with Dad, but always said yes to...
Justin frowned mightily. Then his eyes widened.
Ah, Raj, that's right.
God, do you think I'd remember? I literally had an internet alert set up for his obituary. He died like... 12 years ago, lived to a ripe old age.
And you worked for him for 13 years, right? 13 years.
Oh, man, I did the math once. A good friend, the late great Uncle Shane, taught me the value of spreadsheets when I was just a little kid. On a bus, of all places.
32,500 hours. 50 weeks a year times 13 years times 50 hours a week because you had a wee bit of a commute, hey, Mommy? 32,500 hours spent with Arash rather than your family. And for what? When I was a baby, a toddler, you didn't make much after my daycare expenses. Uncle Shane showed me. I came across that folded lined yellow paper a month ago. He was Mr. Legal Pad, remember? You made about 40 cents an hour after paying for everything. Daycare, extra car, commute costs, clothing and cleaning costs, car insurance. Justin laughed. Man, he had it all worked out. And I, do you remember calling me Mr. Little Big Man and saying, I was fine to be home with Sammy when I was 8 and he was like really little. And he cried and cried. Such a sensitive little guy. A tear escaped Justin's right eye. And I was just helpless, right? I couldn't fix him. I couldn't be his mommy or daddy. Like he was ever around. I couldn't go anywhere. I had nothing to say to him. I mean, 40 cents, Mom. What was I going to say to little Sammy? Mom is off slaving away for medieval child labor wages. Daddy is working to keep her in handbags and pencil skirts. I couldn't comfort him because there was no comfort to be had. You dumped us for pennies, Mom. And he pissed me off. He always has. Just fucking give up hope, kid. But he wouldn't. Fuck, he still doesn't. And yeah, it's maybe kind of paid off for him. He's a crypto zillionaire in a gated community with his 50 kids, but Justin sighed. But he sends his best, Mom.
Justin made air quotes with his fingertips.
Kinda, Mom.
His lips curled in disgust.
But it's all right. Your generation just existed as a warning. And we've learned all we can. Vanity and thoughtlessness and predatory selfishness. You all got eaten by demons, Mom. Total inability to admit fault.
Worshipping at the altar of pride and tolerance. Justin shuddered viscerally and decided to say none of it. Instead, he whispered, Mom, you have to go. Helen's breath was coming short. Her hand was on her sunken chest.
I've been living with you for years.
Justin nodded curtly. Sasha averted her eyes.
Yeah. Yes. It's fair. More than fair, really. I mean, Uncle Shane told me that you went back to work, what, 6 weeks after I was born? Was that right?
Helen was gasping.
I don't. I took what was allowed.
Oh, come on. Cried Justin suddenly, his feral face composed itself almost instantly. His thoughts raced.
You chose strangers, an Iranian, over me and Samuel, Mom. You chose to look good, not do good. I want you to think of all those little memos and emails and invoices and whatever the fuck you did in that little office. Oh, right, not emails. No computers, right? 13 years. It's all been scrapped and dumped and turned into garbage, shit, and ash now, right? Your actual sons are alive. All that career shit is dead. But you live for everything that dies, not for anyone who actually lived.
Where is Arash now, Mom? Dad? Shane? Where are all your ancient boyfriends? Where is my babyhood? My breastfeeding?
Uncle Shane told me all about pumping, Mom, back in the day.
Justin's face was twisted in revulsion.
You would crouch in a corporate toilet with a like fucking vacuum cleaner attached to your nipples, right? Did that ever seem a little odd, Mom? Looking down at a tube robot rather than a baby's. My eyes?
Sammy's eyes? Jesus, you were back at work even faster with Sammy than me, Mom. It was disgusting. Why even bother having children if some swarthy Middle Eastern oily scam artist?
Justin took a deep breath. He glanced at Sasha's pale face.
You're quiet, she murmured.
Sorry, babe.
Damn, I'm going to have to take a pilgrimage to Dr. Gunner's grave.
There's no need to be so angry.
Mom, you gave me like 6 weeks. I gave you 2 years. A little more, in fact.
His voice dropped to a murmur.
But hey, no worries, right? I'm busy. People need me. I have things to do, places to go. And I promise you, Mom, I'm making more than 40 cents an hour.
Why?
Helen's voice was fully panicked, screeching.
Why say nothing all these years? I'm sorry. I'm so, so sorry. I didn't know. I was lied to. Everyone said, be your own, have your own income in case, and your father, he approved.
Justin's mind was a snake eating its tail.
Oh, Dad hated your money-grubbing Mom. Don't you remember him mocking Arash? Oh, God, and your jewelry line and that little life coach bullshit. You remember your 5 clients, Mom? Hey, maybe they ended up here and you could trade life secrets and fortune cookie bullshit. You're saying nothing,
cried Helen, her face red.
Justin exhaled mightily. The thoughts raced through his head.
You had no idea I was unhappy. Christ, I remember being dropped off, Mom, crying and crying. You come home every night. I'm angry and Sammy's eyes are as red as fucking blood. And you just had your little mimosa and rubbed your temples and told us to stop bothering you. Because we were a bother, Mom, let's be honest. You didn't enjoy motherhood. Not really. You think I never noticed the difference between you and Aunt Chloe? I know all the stories. Damn, I used to...
His breath came short.
I used to dream she was my mother. God, she was... She kind of led me to Sasha. You know that, right? It doesn't matter. She's sitting on her matriarchal throne with everyone around her just laughing and loving. That family saved my life, Mom. From you and Dad.
That walk in the woods.
Justin, said Sasha gently, come on. It's all... I know.
There's nothing to be done.
I sound ridiculous to myself, bitching about things half a century ago. I mean, we've got a great...
Justin took a deep breath and compressed his lips.
And she was just a giant marker of everything not to do. She...
You, Mom, taught me everything.
Like your uncle, what's his name, who smoked himself to death? At least he taught me to never touch cigarettes, you said. You did, Mom. You taught me that family is more important than strangers, than prestige, than some stupid pretend career. And this place is costing me way more than 40 cents an hour, Mom. And yeah, maybe they'll end up feeding you through a tube like you fed me through a robot. But you'll make great new friends, and you'll just have to be brave, because I am just busy.
And with that, Justin kissed his mother's sagging cheek and walked arm in arm with his crying wife to the patiently waiting car. As the young orderly half-dragged Helen up the smooth steps to the end of the story. This is Stefan Molyneux, the author and reader. If you have enjoyed this book, which took a lot out of me, freedomain.com/donate. Thank you.